Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Dee Nash in Guthrie, Oklahoma.
And I'm Carol Michael in Indianapolis, Indiana. Good morning, Dee.
Good morning, Carol. I hear you have news for me.
Well, if you consider me going out and buying an amaryllis news, I guess I have news.
Did you buy a waxed amaryllis?
Not yet. I haven't found them yet.
I found them. I found them online. Two are on their way. They weren't expensive either. Tell me about this amaryllis you bought and why.
Well, I decided I'm buying local. So I was in the grocery store, my favorite little Aldi, and they had $5 amaryllis. They were all potted up in the kind of potting material we said not to use and in a plastic container.
Yeah.
But it said just add water. And I thought, you know what? I have to buy that as an experiment to show that if you buy one of those and you just add water, you're going to get an amaryllis.
Yeah, you are. Because amaryllis don't have to be chilled. They just have to pot them up. There's nothing more simple than an amaryllis. But, you know.
So,
are you going to move it to another pot? Or are you going to put that plastic pot down into a cute pot?
No, it's a red pot sort of with red and silver.
Yeah.
Guess what color of amaryllises I had to choose from?
I would say you probably had red and maybe apple blossom.
No, I could choose any shade of red as long as it was red. They only had red.
And probably only one kind. It's probably red lion, right?
It doesn't even say red lion. It's just a red amaryllis.
Yeah, I bet it's red lion. That's the most common one. But there's most common amaryllis are red lion and apple blossom. So it doesn't surprise me.
And it's growing. I mean, I added water and it's growing.
So we had this relates to what you're talking about. We had a little shower for Megan over the weekend. My daughter Megan, for those who don't know, is pregnant with her little baby, Madeline. And we had a shower for Megan and Madeline. And I went to the florist and I bought some beautiful cut flowers for the shower. And right there on the front of the desk, on top of rocks, in big, tall vases to hold the stems were
amaryllis.
So I ordered the flowers on a Thursday, and the amaryllis were just bulbs on top of rocks with a little water in the bottom.
Right.
And then when I came back on Saturday to pick up said flowers, which were beautiful, by the way, I can share them on our story this week, those amaryllis had grown to where they were now peeking out of the top of the vase, which would be about 5 or 6 inches.
So they grow fast.
Yes, that would be the point.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Pretty cool. Easy, easy, people. Just do an amaryllis. It's fun. But that's not what we're talking about today.
We're talking about it's just a few days before Thanksgiving. So here's our quote. One kind word can warm 3 winter months.
And that's a Japanese proverb.
Right.
Which means we don't know who really said it, but I like the thought. So with that in mind,
yes.
What's the kind word? I guess the kind word is flowers.
Flowers is always the kind word. Just be kind to your family and friends, especially whoever cooks Thanksgiving dinner. It is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Even if people bring dishes, it's a lot of work because turkey and dressing doesn't cook itself, people.
No, unless you buy one already cooked.
Yeah, I don't have that option. I'm gluten-free. But I digress. Okay, moving on to the flower. We're talking about a flower we've talked about before in connection with other Christmas flowers. But today we are going to focus on just it. Helleborus niger, the Christmas rose.
And you said that you don't have these in Oklahoma.
Well, I said, no, not exactly. I said that I've only grown them one time, but I don't see them in the grocery store for sale in Oklahoma.
Right. And so you have to really hunt to find these in the grocery store blooming at Christmas time. But before poinsettias, or I should say poinsettias, before amaryllis, which is very popular now, the Christmas rose was the flower of Christmas time.
Yes, it was. And the proof of that is I have a plate, and I'll take a picture of it, that is hand-painted with, I think it's with ivy and Christmas roses on it. It has hellebores on it. And I actually put it out at Christmas every year because it reminds me that that used to be, you know, that used to be a big deal. Just like I also have a book called The Holly and the Ivy. So the Christmas rose, tell us a little bit about it. It's not the same thing as Hellebarius hybridus, which is the Lenten rose.
Right. The Christmas rose looks basically the same as the hybrid hellebores that we are used to blooming at Easter time. But this one actually blooms sometime between November, January, maybe into February, depending on your weather, depending on how many sunny days, depending on snowfall. But it, mine is blooming out there at the end of November right now. One of them is. But it's very, I would say it's easy to grow, but it's actually easier to grow a Lenten rose than it is a Christmas rose. But it's well worth finding a good spot for them. They like it partial shade. And definitely would like to have it be a little bit drier or at least well-drained soil. They don't like to have their wet feet or they would up and die.
Right. They kind of disappear. And I've grown one Christmas rose, and that was Ivory Prince.
Ah, that's
and
a good
I just
one.
Looked it. Yeah, I just looked it up again to make sure it wasn't considered a Lenten rose, and it's not. I will say it wasn't very happy here. It's very, very pretty. I think my ground is too wet in my front flower bed and maybe too shady for it. So, or it could be this just so doggone hot in Oklahoma in the summer that it's not happy. I have a lot of luck with the Lenten roses, but my one foray in Christmas roses didn't work. But I sure wish I could get it as a plant in the winter.
Yeah, and I've found them before. In Indiana, we have Kroger stores, and I've seen them at Kroger every once in a while. And I've also seen them at Trader Joe's. And sometimes I just put out the word via my friends and on Facebook that says, anybody that sees these anywhere, give me a shout, you know, and I will drive to go get it.
Right, because it brightens up the winter holidays along with all the other plants that we actually talked about last year on a podcast called You Can't Have Christmas Without the Plants. So we're going to link to that in our show notes. And it's also episode 7 on our first season if people want to go look at it. Is there anything else you want to say about it?
I do want to say stuff about it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you weren't finished.
No, I could talk about it forever. This is one of those plants that is very difficult for garden centers to sell because if you buy it in the spring, it's just hellebore leaves. And people don't.
Which are kind of ugly.
I think they're pretty.
Well, they're kind of ugly pretty, like ugly dolls.
I'm not familiar with ugly dolls, and I don't think I want to know anything about ugly dolls.
I'm going to send you an ugly doll for Christmas because it'll be funny.
No. Do not send me an ugly doll.
Anyway, back to the beautiful leathery foliage of the hellebore.
Here's what's nice about it, Dee. It stands out as a dark green leaf in the wintertime, and it stays dark green pretty much until you cut it off in late winter. And that's really nice when the rest of the garden is all tans and browns.
That's true. It is a lovely dark green until here something almost kills it, like cold. Because remember, you have snow. And so where you live, it gets covered up by snow, and the snow helps insulate the leaves. Where I live, it just most of the time gets bitter, windy, cold, and eventually it has black spots all over those beautiful ugly doll leather leaves.
Anyway, it is hardy from zone 4 to zone 9, so it would be great in Indianapolis if it has the right spot.
And Austin, Texas,
yes.
Apparently.
And you... You mentioned Ivory Prince is a variety. Another common variety is Joseph Limper. There's one called Potter's Wheel, and these are white flowers, and Potter's Wheel is a bigger bloom, and I have one out there, although I never label anything, and I've kind of, little seedlings have come up, so I've kind of transferred them
so
around.
So you have babies.
Yes, but there's one bed that kind of borders the patio, and I've kind of made these sort of line the edge by the patio because there are rocks down under there at the edge of the patio, so it's pretty well drained. And I'm just trying to create like a little arc of them that's not too far from the back door because you don't want to have to go out to the back garden to see a flower in November. You want to go right out 10 steps, see it, and then run back inside.
Right. Maybe snap a picture with your phone.
And I did.
I'm sure you did. Cinnamon snow is kind of pinkish along with being. So all of the hellebores, Niger, kind of have white to pink blossoms,
right?
Wouldn't you say?
I would say so. Yeah. But the problem is, like I said, garden centers have a difficult time selling them because people walk in April and May and June, and they want to see what the flower looks like, and they're not going to see the flower until November. November is not the right time to actually plant it outside.
Right. So you don't see hellebores niger as often as you do the Lenten rose, because the Lenten rose starts to bloom in my part of the world in late February, early March, because that's about the time gardeners are losing their minds. And so they'll go and buy any flower. And I see it at the box stores. I know a guy who sells them all the time. Bob Scott, he has a lot of them. You can find them many different places locally.
Right. And so ask at your garden center in the spring. This is one you're going to make a little note, put it on your calendar, your little reminder app or whatever that says, buy the Christmas rose, because you're going to buy it in like May, and then you're going to plant it, and then you're going to go out the next November, and you're going to be so happy because Carolyn Dee told you to plant it, and you ended up with a beautiful flower when nothing else was in bloom.
Or if you're lucky, it'll be in your grocery store in the winter as a flowering plant, and then you can start hardening it off a little bit by putting it in, say, like your garage, and then bringing it back in a little bit, and then eventually you can plant it outside. And that's another way. So it's up to you.
All right. Now I'm cool. Done. I'm done talking about it now, Dee.
It's like when I talked about, never mind.
You don't know what you talked about.
No, I was going to say something, and then I thought, no.
The Christmas rose is one of my favorite holiday flowers. I just wanted to say that.
Okay. It's been established. It's not one of my favorites, but I like it.
Thanks for letting me talk about it, Dee. That was so kind of you.
It's like when I talk about crepe myrtles. You just can't identify, but it's okay.
You see what I did there? I said it was kind of you, and that was our quote, one kind word can warm three winter months.
Oh, it's just you being sarcastic again. So our next quote.
Oh, excuse me, again?
Talk about our
again? That was not a kind word, Dee.
What if? Okay, so under the veggies, we have another quote.
Okay.
Because we're not really talking about a specific veggie today. Let's guess. Let's let our readers guess for a second what we're talking about. In the winter, she curls up around a good book and dreams away the cold. It's by Ben Aronovich. I can't quite pronounce his name, but he's an author and screenplay writer, and he wrote some Doctor Who episodes, among other things. Maybe we'll talk later about, you know, plants and Doctor Who episodes.
Yeah, that'll be a topic that I'll be listening to, because I'm one of the few people in the entire world who has not really watched Doctor Who.
I think you'd like some seasons. I really do. So what are we talking about today?
Let's see, vegetables, a quote about books. I think we're talking about books about vegetable gardening.
Yeah, vegetable gardening books that we love.
And these would make great Christmas gifts, which is why we wanted to mention them. And we've mentioned some of them before, but we're kind of coming up with one list.
Yeah, this is one list, at least for right now. I'm sure more vegetable books will come out this year because they always do. The first one that we thought of was Mastering the Art of Vegetable Gardening by Matt Mattis. I know that Matt is working on another book, and I think it comes out next year, but that's just a guess. We love Matt's first book. I'm sure we'll really like his next book. Beautiful book, great Christmas book for anybody who wants to grow vegetables, because it will work for people who are beginners all the way up to very experienced gardeners, because when we discussed this book rather heavily, we talked about the fact that neither one of us had ever grown onion from seed.
Right. And you can always pick up a book and you don't ever know it all. So you can always learn something new. And this is a beautiful book, great photographs. It's one I'm going to refer to often for inspiration.
The next book is Veggie Garden Remix by Nikki Jabor. It's another book we really, really liked. And the reason we liked it was because it had unusual varieties of vegetables. And if you've grown vegetables for a long time, you might want to try something new. And these are all very unique varieties, and we're both into that. So that's pretty fun. And it won the Gold Award from GardenCom this year for best overall book.
Right. And she does, she has another book, an older book. She does year-round gardening, and she's way up in, I think, Nova Scotia.
Yeah, she's in Nova Scotia.
It gets very cold. She has a lovely garden, and you can follow her on Instagram, and you'll see pictures of her harvesting spinach in December and January, which we're not doing.
Right.
Because we're lazy.
No, we're lazy, and we don't care. So, but I think it's awesome that she does, and she does it all in raised beds, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's very lovely.
I love raised beds. Okay, the next one is Vegetables Love Flowers, Companion Planting for Beauty and Bounty. And that's by our friend Lisa Mason Ziegler. And she, if I'm remembering right, won a silver award from GardenCom this year for her writing.
Yes.
I think it was under writing, right?
Correct.
And so this is a very good book. Really more for the beginner to middle gardener. But the truth is anybody can learn more about gardening. Nobody knows it all.
Yeah, and this is a book. I think we seem to be attracted to books that help us grow not just bountiful vegetable gardens, but beautiful vegetable gardens as well.
Right. And so she talks a lot about flowers, which is very cool. I love flowers in my vegetable garden. The next book is No Waste Kitchen Gardening by Katie Elzer-Peters. And this would be a great Christmas gift for the person who always wanted to grow celery from the celery they bought at the grocery store, or onions from onion bottoms, really
right.
Not tops, but onion bottoms. You know, all those people that take the avocado seed and put it in a glass of water with toothpicks and decide to grow an avocado tree. So I think this would be a really good book for people with children if they want to get them interested in gardening.
Yeah, this is a great book for if you have kids. And I think I have a copy of this, and I think I'm going to loan this to my niece, who has a couple of little ones at home, and they can come up with some really great ideas, because they both of the kids like to get their hands in the dirt, and this will probably keep her sane in the wintertime, because you can do this stuff in the wintertime with just the stuff you have from the grocery store.
Exactly. It'd be something to do. And that way you can get your hands in soil. And that'd be fun. And kids can see how things grow.
Right.
The next one is How to Grow Vegetables and Fruits with Organic Methods. And this is one you added to the list.
I added this one to the list, Dee. You can still find old used copies of this. This is the book that I used to take out from the library when I was in like sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. And if they still had that book and it still had that library card, it would say, Carol Michael, Carol Michael, Carol Michael, because I kept checking it out over and over and over, and I was just fascinated by it.
And why were you fascinated by it?
Because
in the sixth and seventh grade?
Because I loved gardening. I still love gardening. I didn't know if you knew that. And it was just...
No.
Really? It was just so fun to read, and I would just read about growing all kinds of stuff that we didn't necessarily grow in the garden at my house. And I've bought and given away old copies of this, and right now on my shelf I have two versions. I think one's from 1960 and one might be from, I don't know, 69, because they kept reprinting it over and over, new editions.
Yeah, it was a big moneymaker for the Rodale Institute, which used to publish organic gardening, but then it died.
But that's
like
that's a good oldie if you want to do a throwback book.
Awesome.
Now, the next book I have given to all my nieces and nephews so that they would learn to garden without me over their shoulder. It's the 20, 30-something guide, gardening guide by Dee Nash.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that you gave them to your nieces and nephews. I have also given it to my nieces and nephews. And at the end of every talk, I talk about the future of gardening and planting seeds and how... this is the whole reason I wrote that book. People often ask me if I'm going to write another book, and I'm like, well, if it's something I really passionately believe in, well, I passionately believe in passing on gardening knowledge to the next generation. I just think it's super important.
Right. And even if you're outside of that age range of 20 to 30, this is a really good book if you want a guide and just trying to get yourself established and are not really sure what you're doing, go get Dee's book.
Well, thanks, Carol. That's nice. The next book is Heirloom Vegetable Gardening, A Master Gardener's Guide to Planting, Seed Saving, and Cultural History by William Woys Weaver. And this one I have never read, but let me explain. I want this for Christmas, actually. And the reason I want it is because William Woys Weaver is like the premier authority on heirloom vegetables. He's written numerous books about specific vegetables and the history behind them and how things were developed and seed saving. And so this is like the big guide. And so I think I'd like to read it. I think he's amazing, actually. And it's not boring, people. He's a really good writer.
Oh, Dee, I was not going to get myself any new gardening books for Christmas. But now I might have to get this one. Way to go.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I think that this podcast costs us a lot of money. People wonder if we make money. No. People, we spend.
Because we have to do things like buy heirloom vegetable gardening, because I only have, like, I don't know, 100 books on vegetable gardening, but I don't have to
exactly
have one. That's the one.
Exactly. At least we don't collect motorcycles. Wait, my husband does. All right, back. They're a lot cheaper than motorcycles.
Right.
So you name the last one, which is a great book.
Yes, Designing the New Kitchen Garden, an American Potager Handbook by Jennifer Bartley. We know Jennifer from GardenCom. She lives over in Ohio. She's a landscape architect by training. And this is a great book to talk about how to put together a very nice garden.
Right. In fact, I've said this over and over again. I totally copied her. She's now moved, so she doesn't have her potager, the same one anymore. But I totally copied and slightly changed my potager design ideas from her potager because I thought hers was so beautiful and I wanted something just like it. And I have to say, I've never regretted gardening, vegetable gardening in raised beds, especially raised beds I can sit on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And Jennifer is a very lovely person, and I talked to her extensively. I don't know, it was about, I think it was when she came to Indianapolis in 2011 for GardenCom, and about the books, and she has another book. We'll also link to it, too, but it all started out when she was in graduate school, and she was studying the potager and had done, I think it was her thesis, and her advisor.
It was her thesis.
Her advisor suggested that it would make a great book, and so never really setting out to become an author, but she did put that into a book, and it was published by Timber Press. And it's a classic, I think, now. If I could say that word,
yeah.
Can I say classic?
I think so. I think it's a classic. It teaches the history of potagers and how they came about and how they came from Islamic gardens and monastic gardens. It's one of my favorite books, and I periodically pull it down from the shelf and reread it.
Good. We'll link to that one, too. That's a pretty good list. Somebody would have a very Merry Christmas if they got all those books.
Right. And since we're going to link to them all, you can, if you don't buy them locally from your bookstore, which you should be able to do if you want to, you can also buy them from Amazon, and we will link to Amazon.
But yeah, all the books except the one on how to grow vegetables and fruits with the organic methods, they're all in print. They all should be readily orderable. Orderable, is that a word?
Mm. Available.
Available at your local bookstore, and they can get them for you.
Yeah, and if you want that one, you can get it off, I'm sure, eBay. I'm sure they have it.
Yeah, or maybe contact me, and maybe I could get rid of my second copy.
She won't, so don't contact her, people.
Okay.
Okay, on to our dirt, which is kind of dirty dirt.
So, Dee, I went through the grocery store the other day, trying to avoid the pre-Thanksgiving crowds. And there in the floral section are those fall-colored poinsettias. Yes or no, Dee? Fall-colored poinsettias.
A big fat no. And also glittered poinsettias and poinsettias that have been turned blue. I hate that.
Yes. And, well, this is the second or third year I've seen fall-colored poinsettias. So someone's buying them, Dee, because they wouldn't just do this if people weren't buying them.
Yeah, I figure it's just somebody who is living in a mid-century modern house, and they want to have this kind of trendy-looking thing, and so they buy them. You know, more power to you, people. If you want to own an orange poinsettia because you went to Oklahoma State University or something, you go for it. Personally, I like all my plants to be naturally colored. For example, I saw weird colored succulents this week, because one of the things we did for the shower is we planted succulents in one of my, I have a green tea set. And so we planted these succulents in them. And why on God's green earth would you put I'm looking at them right now. Succulents are beautiful all by themselves. They're either grayish blue or slightly purple or dark green. Why would you turn them a weird shade of blue or yellow?
I wouldn't. They paint them. And I talked to somebody that painted them and sold them, and people buy them. So they like the idea of a succulent that's painted black and orange for Halloween or fall colors for Thanksgiving, or God forbid, red and green for Christmas, and put the glitter on it. I don't know why. Just buy something plastic that's got that crap, I mean, that stuff on it.
Well, here's what I wonder. When they paint them like that, don't you think it messes with the plant's pores? I have no scientific basis for this, but I don't know how the plant breathes.
Well, they said that the plant they use is water-based, and so it doesn't harm the succulent, but I'm thinking it can't be great for it either.
I can't either. The other way that they dye plants is they put the dye in the water and then the plant soaks it up. And you see that a lot with orchids.
And mums. And yeah. We don't like that either.
I'm kind of a naturalist. I'm sorry.
We're naturalists, we're purists. We don't cotton to all that messing around with the color of the plants.
No, we don't cotton to it, whatever that means. I mean, I paint my nails, but I don't paint plants. That's just not me. But I'm going to take, and I'm going to show you guys a picture of these succulents. They're so pretty. You wouldn't want to paint them. They're like little friends. We don't want to hurt them.
No, we don't want to hurt them at all. And so we think that plants are best purchased in their natural state, whatever natural color they are. Leave the paint, leave the glitter, leave the ugly dyes away from the plants.
And so now we got preachy on you, and we apologize.
Do we?
Well, we were told one time we were preachy, but
what?
We try not to be.
Preachy? Us? We're garden angelists.
Opinionated.
We're garden angelists. We preach the good news of gardening.
Yes, we do. That's true. So happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to us. You can find us wherever good podcasts are found. In fact, I found us on another place that I didn't even know we were on. I think it's called Podtail, like the tail of a dog. Great. Thanks, Podtail. And also we're at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can follow us individually. You can follow us as the Garden Angelus, and you can email us your questions at thegardenangelus@gmail.com. And one of us will get back to you as soon as possible. I get most of our questions, Carol, off of Instagram.
Yes, and we get a few on Facebook. But we'll put,
we do.
We'll put links to all of that in our show notes so we can be contacted in multiple ways, and we love to hear from our listeners. We are thankful for everyone who listens to our podcast every week.
So until next time, we hope you get to chat this week over the garden gate.
Bye now.
Bye.